Yo, what is up, all you slashers and survivor girls? We got ourselves another Creepin' a Real Horror Cast. I'm that good buddy Lunchbox, if you guys didn't know already. And I'm ready to bring another review for you guys. So I'm excited for you guys to be here. And sorry about last week, having to miss. For some reason, my editing software decided to just go all funky on me. So, it was a little bit of a break, but we're back in it. And this week is even more of the specials, because not only are we rounding out a franchise, but this is also my birthday weekend. So I will be turning 37 on July 21st. So hey, go ahead and drop me a little email there at creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com. And you see how that little segue there? I like that. That was pretty good. And then also, if you go to the Instagrams and the Facebooks, just search for at creepingitreal, and that's R-E-E-L. Again, you could always drop me a line, say, hey, give me a movie suggestion. I love taking movie suggestions. So, hey, if I end up, using your suggestion, I'll give you a little name drop on the episode. How about that? That sounds pretty nice. I love you guys. This is so much fun. So I'm ready to jump in on this one. And so, like I mentioned, this is my birthday week. And as a special birthday gift to myself for this episode, I wanted to go ahead and actually round out a franchise that we've been kind of working on slowly but surely. Like, I mean, me and Meg worked on it. I'm pretty sure you already clicked on the button. You already know what's actually going to, happen. We're going to be doing Jaws 3D. For this week's review. But so me and Meg, when we first kind of got cranking on, I think it was my first birthday episode, we ended up doing Jaws 1. And then I think it was like a year or so after we kind of came back, we ended up doing Jaws 2. And then because I was just a glutton for punishment, I went ahead and just skipped over 3 and went straight to Jaws the Review. Jaws the Revenge. And that movie is just if for any of you that have not listened to the show and do not know my absolute distaste for Jaws the Revenge, just to paint a picture here for you guys. So Jaws is my all-time favorite movie. Like, it's number one, like, out of everything. Jaws is my all-time favorite. I've always loved it as a kid. I've just been mesmerized by, just everything that the movie embodies. It's an incredible piece of cinematic history. Just from the fact that the shark never worked to just the actual cast. Everything just kind of went into this movie and made it absolute gold. And then you get to the final film in this franchise, and it is complete just trash. Like, you cannot, like, there's just nothing to salvage it. Like, the cast is okay. You have the incredible Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine, but, you're almost putting them in a position where it's like, yes, they're great actors, but it's like the script and the story just doesn't hold up. And on top of that, the shark just doesn't hold up. It's just like I could go on for days about all the problems with that friggin' movie. So to have my all-time favorite film be Jaws, and then my all-time least favorite be Jaws, is really, really funny. It could have been any other movie, but for those, it's like out of a drop of a hat, if you ask me, Favorite movie? Boom, Jaws. Least favorite movie? Jaws or Event. Like, it's that easy. I got to the point where I used to work at Hollywood Video, and whenever I was like restocking and organizing movies and things like that, I would come across Jaws the Revenge, and I would literally put it behind things just so that no one else would see it. Like, as a quick glance, like, just because I did not want anybody to rent that movie. It was funny when Meg used to work at Movie Stop, and I used to do the same exact thing. Every time I'd see Jaws the Revenge, I would put it literally behind something that would have just never been looked at. Like, it was just, I hid that movie because it just, I just, the absolute distaste for it. So, when we got into Jaws, the first review, absolutely incredible. I mean, you got the, you know, all the big boys, Roy Scheider, you know, Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah. And you know it, you love it. There it is. Then it jumps right on into Jaws 2 when we did our review for that. And it was really funny to me because I remember seeing Jaws when I was a kid and absolutely being terrified and loving it. And then but the funny thing is that I remember Jaws 2 way more. For some reason, I always remember Jaws 2. And I mean, it's just because a lot of the scenes just kind of like stuck out, you know, like with like just how Roy Scheider, when he's like freaking out with, you know, at the mayor, and he's, you know, because he doesn't want to deal with the shark again. And then all of a sudden when his sons are, you know, a lot older and they end up, you know, disobeying him and then going off and doing that whole gimmick. And then he has to literally fight off the shark and, you know, electrocute the shit out of it. Again, I thought it was really great. Meg saw absolutely no need for the movie. And on that review, like, I can also see where, yeah, like, maybe the movie just did not need to be made. Like, there was no point for it. I mean, the shark literally wasn't out for revenge on, it was just happened to be another shark and they just had to deal with this whole situation again, like, you know, it was, you know, years later. But at the same time, it's like, it's still really enjoyable. Like, it still holds up. I mean, the kills are really awesome. The shark looks really good. I mean, like, I cannot, if you ever sat down with me and just said, hey, let's watch Jaws 2, I'm like, fuck yeah, like, let's go, let's do it. Now, when it comes to Jaws 3, this one is weird because they were trying to add in an element that was not played around with yet, and they were really, I don't know if it would have made it any better if it was in not 3D. But at the same time, I could see it's like, you know what? Like, points for trying. Like, but that's the thing. So let's go ahead and jump on into the perts here for you guys real quick. So starting off in our directing chair, we got Joe Alves, who also worked on the original Jaws behind the camera, which is pretty cool. So the fact that he, you know, kind of took on the reins, pretty awesome. I know a lot of people kind of gave him crap for it, and there's a couple parts where, yeah, you could definitely tell there's some, I mean, this is his first directing film, so it's you could definitely see, you know, just that first-time director, you know, bits. But, yeah, Loma, it's like, I didn't think he did that bad of a job. So, yeah, Joe Alves, way to go there, buddy. Love it. But then we also had the story was written by Richard Matheson, who also did tons and tons of stuff. I mean, his credentials are just kind of just keep going on. But yeah, I mean, he's done great work too. And then we also have, it's for our main cast, we have Dennis Quaid as Mike Brody, Bess Armstrong as Catherine Morgan, Simon McCormandale as Philip Fitzroyce. What a fucking name. We got Louis Gossett Jr. as Calvin Bouchard, John Pooch as Sean Brody, Leah Thompson as Kellyanne Bukowski, and P.H. Moriarty as Jack Tate. Yeah, so I mean, this is a pretty stellar cast. And on top of that, as I mentioned, Leah Thompson, if you guys aren't familiar with that name, why don't you just go on back and, cue up that old Back to the Future film? Because that's right, she plays Lorraine Baines in Back to the Future. Now, the great thing about this is that Jaws 3 was Leah's first official full-length feature film. And then it wasn't until about 2 years later is when she jumped right on into Back to the Future and became like that, you know, that mega icon that, you know, that we all know and love. So, I mean, this is pretty cool that, I mean, this was her first big feature film. And then on top of that, I mean, we also have Dennis Quaid as, you know, taking on the role of Mike Brody. So, I mean, I thought this was really cool. I mean, and Dennis Quaid is a fucking hunk, man. Like, the dude is he was pretty dreamy back in the 80s, man. Like, that was he was a good looking man. So yeah, that was the thing, was I like that they kind of kept the story going to a degree, with always, you know, just making up its own, with its own thing. I mean, just because, like, when it came off of, like, one where, I mean, it's like, literal own story. Like, you cannot, like, that's all it needs. But then when it jumps into two and they try to continue it on or, like, just add in another shark, and then it's, you know, kind of it's almost like relive all, like, the glory days is kind of what it was doing. This, I guess, like, it really holds its own. As far as it being like it's something completely separate from, you know, anything from Amity Island. I mean, this story, the thing that I think makes it interesting is that it doesn't take place up north. This takes place down here in Florida at SeaWorld. That's right, SeaWorld, not some generic water park. No, straight up SeaWorld. And I've been to this park. One of my favorite moments, I didn't realize this right at the time. So, like, I've always known that Jaws 3 was filmed there here in Orlando. And the thing that was hilarious was that it was about 2 or 3 years ago. I took my family to SeaWorld for a little day vacation. And, you know, so my daughter was just itty bitty. Like, she, she was able to kind of, like, you know, she actually understood what was going on, but she was still pretty young. She couldn't ride any of the rides. But, like, my son, he was a little bit bigger, and he was also into that mode of, like, he could do certain things. He, you know, he absolutely loved the show. He could actually, like, lock in on what was going on. And one of my favorite attractions, I'm pretty sure you could guess it, is the shark exhibit. And every time I go to SeaWorld, I instantly have to go to the shark exhibit. I don't care about Shamu. I don't care. Like, I need to go see the shark exhibit. One thing that I do miss that they don't play anymore, and I can understand why, because it's like they don't want to promote the fear of a shark. And I think a lot of the, you know, with movies like, you know, Jaws, that kind of put into that, like, sharks need to be feared because they can be predators and they can, you know, harm. I mean, it's like you go in the woods and you fuck with a bear, like, you're going to get messed up. Same thing. You go in the water, you mess with a shark, like, you're going to get messed up. But at the same time, they're not as like a bloodthirsty killing machine is like what the media and things like that back in the day used to make the sharks out to be. And they used to play this film. So you went through this exhibit and it was really cool because they showed it. It just made it feel very Jaws-like. It was very intimidating. The music was just deep and just mysterious. And then they were like these killing machines, these blah, blah, blah. Like, and then the screen like lifted up and you could see the inside of the tank. And you could see all the sharks. And it was so, so goddamn beautiful. And then that's when you walk through and they reconfigured the whole shark exhibit now. At the time, you could go see that little movie and then you would walk down and then you could go through the whole that underwater like conveyor belt type thing. So you went through the whole thing. Well, I took my son through there and, you know, we just absolutely loved it. Well, then, like my mom was with us and she was talking with one of the, like, you know, directors or, you know, the, you know, ladies that work there. And she is like, oh yeah. Like, you know, like if your son loves this so much, we have a VIP, viewing area. And so there was like a whole VIP tour that we went through. Like, so we ended up, you know, paying for that. And so you actually got to go back behind the scenes and you got to see the tanks. So we got to walk up on top where they do like the fish feeding. So that was really, really neat. But the coolest thing, and I didn't realize it right at the time, and I have a picture with me and my son standing in front of that original, the authorized personnel only sign. They still have it hanging up in the same exact spot from the film, and it's like at first I was like just geeking out, but it's just really cute just seeing my son just kind of just leaning up against the wall just hanging out. So I was like, that was really cool to get some type of just for a Jaws fan to sit there and just go, you know what? Like, this was a part of the film. So I was like, that was really neat. Now, as I mentioned, this is very much in the world of SeaWorld. And there were times with this film where I felt that it was more of a, like, just a big SeaWorld commercial. I mean, they're granted, they were really trying to, you know, promote the liveliness of SeaWorld and just the magical, you know, I mean, this is back in the 80s. So, I mean, there's very kind of bare bones, but at the same time, you know, it's like you didn't want to make, you know, put a bad mark on SeaWorld. I mean, it wasn't their fault. A goddamn shark swam into the opening there. But at the same time, there were a lot of times where it kind of held up the movie and took you out of it because it was too commercial-like. Granted, this is an 80s movie, and there is so much nostalgia for me watching, you know, any of this stuff. I mean, this movie came out July 22nd, 1983. I was born July 21st, 1986. So this is a three-year-old movie by the time I was even, you know, I touched Earth. But that was the thing. Back in the 80s, I do remember, you know, being just this little kid. Even in the 90s, they had a lot of the same style in there. I mean, they definitely amped up, you know, some of the production values and things like that. But one of the things that, like, as watching this movie, the nostalgia comes back for me is those Shamu push carts those things were so freaking cool. And I was like, I wish I could just own one of those just because of just how awesome and again, nostalgic those things were. I remember as a little kid riding around in those little push carts. And it was such a cool idea just to, I mean, nowadays it's like everyone just brings their strollers and stuff like that for their kids. You know, that's rightfully so. But I was like, as a kid, it felt so stinking cool just to ride around in a freaking whale. Like, that was something was, it just added to the experience. And I don't think they do anything like that anymore. And with the way that theme parks are nowadays, it is a total money suck. And it's just one of those things where, yeah, it's like if you end up getting something like that, you're paying quite a bit for it. I mean, you can sit there and go, oh yeah, no, we'll charge you for a regular stroller, but it's like if you want to pay the extra, then you can get the really good stroller. But it's like little shit like that. And with this film, they were it was funny because SeaWorld is not built that way. SeaWorld is not connected to the ocean at all. Like, it's in the middle of fucking Orlando. There is absolutely nothing connecting it to the ocean. So I always found that little portion of the film to be really, really hilarious because they never, I don't 100% recall, but I don't believe they say where the SeaWorld is located. But it is supposed to be in Florida. And the way that they've actually designed this park was not only is this just like your standard SeaWorld, but it's got this like innovative, high-tech, just underwater like viewing area. So as I mentioned, where you have that, like, the underwater tunnel in the shark exhibit, right? That is basically what they were doing for this, where you have the conveyor belt, and then you could walk through, and it literally looks like you're walking, like, under the ocean. Like, it's, and you can see all the sharks and fish all swimming around you. And that's basically what they did with this whole thing, but it's this like extremely long walking area. Like, so you walk down and they have this thing where it looks like you're walking through a serpent's mouth, and they're like, then it gets into this whole another area where there's like a shipwreck, and it's like, it's really, really, really neat. However, there's a lot of like, it's yeah, like, oh yeah, they have like fish and stuff swimming in front of you, but it's not, there's nothing that's like, wow. It's like, oh my God. It's like you're literally walking in front of a fish tank. Like, it's just really cool just to be able to walk through that whole area. And they do like a bunch of stuff where, like, when you walk through the serpent's mouth, you walk in and it's almost like you're going through his stomach, and there's like squid tentacles and stuff that like pops out, like animatronics. So they make it like it's an exciting little walkthrough, almost like haunted house type stuff. But it's a little hokey at times. But as like, that's really it. Like, you're just walking through, and because this thing is underneath the water, it's, I could definitely see where, like, especially in this day and age, where the liability and just the risk is so incredible. And in this film, they weren't expecting a freaking massive shark to just come in and just start messing things up. And so, I mean, that was the thing, was like, as like they were walking through, when the shark hits the tube and starts to, like, there's like 30 people that get locked into this one little pod. It seals everything shut. And I was like, for me, that would be the most terrifying thing to like to actually have that feeling of seeing a shark, you know, attack you, and then when you get in, like all the water filling up as it's like, and everyone's screaming. That was pretty terrifying. I will say so myself. But lo and behold, so we have our main guy, Calvin Bouchard. He is the owner or the manager or the CEO or he is the guy in charge of SeaWorld at this park. Like, so anytime like anybody's got a problem or, you know, they got to go to the boss, it's Calvin. And it's funny because he would be, I feel like I would love to work for that guy. Like, he just seems like just such a down home, like he came from the streets and then, yeah, like he just kind of worked his way up type of guy. Like he didn't seem too like uptight. Like he could actually, you know, enjoy working with, you know, some of the other people and things like that. And he had like a good sense of humor and he was just very, like, he was such a warm, welcoming type of figure. And it was, he reminded me a lot of like Steve Harvey. Like, if you ever watch like Family Feud, like that's how I see Calvin Bouchard. Like, it's just, he's basically fucking Steve Harvey. But it was just really funny because there were those times when he was very much that money mogul, type of person. Like, he just wanted to, again, you could just see that, like, Mr. Krabs in him where he's like, oh, I just need the money, money, money. And there was stuff where it was giving me, like, flashbacks to the mayor for Jaws, the original film, where the mayor, like, that's their whole premise is that they got to make money for the winter. And it's just if the summer doesn't, you know, pan out for them, then they're just gonna just all just eat crow. And it just became the same where it's like, oh, nope, keep going. And all of a sudden, oh crap, I screwed up. And Calvin, I think, did that same exact thing, because at first we first meet Calvin by us being told as audience members, like, this is the opening of SeaWorld, like, of the new big extravagant park. So this is their big I guess day one. And because it is a huge event, Calvin is putting on this whole big media press thing. Like, so I mean, he's just trying to get as much coverage as he possibly can, again, because you gotta, you know, sell the thing. So everything's got to be top notch, all the, you know, there's no expense spared. Like, it's just, he is trying to make everything and everybody's experience as top notch as it possibly can be. And on top of that, he ends up getting another celebrity, filmmaker, you know, Natural Geographic type, you know, filmmaker. And that is our guy, Philip Fitzroyce. And he is that kind of guy. Like, he's not much like a Steve Irwin, but he does a lot of those, like, film documentary, like, you know, so he likes to get all into the nitty gritty and, you know, get to the spots where people don't like to be, and put himself into danger. And he's got his film guy, Jack Tate, who is very intimidating. It's just like, he almost doesn't seem like a cameraman, more so as muscle, and it's a guy that's like, if you mess with Philip, you're gonna get the jack. Like, it's just he doesn't seem like he'd be too fun to hang around with. But so they get these two guys to come in, and they were also, as far as like for promotion and, you know, media coverage, on top of all of the news reporters and everything else, he gets Philip to go ahead and film a bunch of his own documentary style, just videos like of, the killer whales and the dolphins and everything. Like, it's just get whatever footage you can just to compile, and then that way they could put it together in like this little documentary and then put it out for extra promotion for the event. And it turns out that about the time where the film starts to kind of crank into, oh shit, there's a problem. We get into the whole thing of the shark breaking through the main gate and, damaging the whole, it knocks it off the track, and then so it becomes a big problem, because then it's like they have an open gate to the open ocean that technically shouldn't be there. It turns out that's like, so when the shark gets in and they kind of find out that, okay, that they have a shark problem, Philip automatically goes into, we got to kill this thing and then put it on camera, and you're going to get this like crazy good media coverage. And Calvin is just going, yeah, I like the sound of that. Let's do that. But then we get Catherine. She is one of the like the head marine biologists. And she's just like, no, like there's no way that we're going to kill this animal. It's like, if you really think about it, it's like, this is the first great white shark in captivity that anybody's ever seen. It's like, no one, like, that is something that has never been done before. There's never been any aquarium ever that has held a great white shark, which is pretty, like, impressive. Like, I mean, there's been tons of sharks, in captivity, but it's like never a great white shark, which is crazy. So the fact that they have this opportunity and they can almost get more media coverage by, posting, just bulletins on its health and really like making it a feel good piece where they're like, well, we rescued this great white shark and now we're bringing it back to health. We're going to get it going, and then we're going to release it like they do in every SeaWorld, kind of like catch, heal, and then release. They wanted to do that with the shark, and Calvin's like, yeah, no, that sounds like it's a better idea. So they go through this whole gimmick where Philip is going to basically make himself live bait. And they all get into the water. They're all, scuba diving. And the shark kind of just pops in, and starts swimming around him. Well, Brody is up on top, and he's got his spear gun. And he ends up, they do the whole thing of, like, you got to shoot. They end up shooting it and knocking it out. And then they were able to get it back into captivity. Well, a little bit later, Catherine, she is getting it to, like, she's basically reviving it. And it's weird because the shark is just very lifeless. It's lifeless, I should say. And it's not moving around. There's barely any sign that it is even real. Like, so she's in the tank trying to get it to kind of come back. And so she's sitting there. They're trying to pump water through its gills and things like that. And Brody comes in, and they're being super playful, and he's like, okay, well, I guess if I can't spend time with you here, because him and Catherine were boyfriend girlfriend at the time. And it was a really, really cute scene, because he's like, okay, well, I guess I'll help you, do this since we can't spend time with you. And then all of a sudden the shark just pops to life and just scares the shit out of Mike. And what's hilarious is that Mike just kind of just jumps in. even though he kind of has a little bit of a phobia towards sharks because of, you know, what he dealt with as a kid. And the thing that I like that they touch on is throughout the basically the opening of the movie is they touch on what happened just very little, like, from, like, what happened in that first movie. And, like, there's a whole thing of, like, when Sean, his little brother, shows up, Sean is afraid of the water, and he's like, oh, no, it's just something that happened when I was a kid. So they really touch on that one detail, and they keep it going. I mean, and it's nice as a audience member because we know what these guys went through as little kids. And but it doesn't feel like it's like a straight up info dump where it's kind of like how they used to do with the Spider-Man movies, where it's like every single Spider-Man movie's got to have some type of origin story where it gives the full breakdown of everything that happened to Peter Parker. They don't do that. It's just very much a, hey, I got a problem, and then touch on a little bit, and then that's about it. Now, as I mentioned, so Catherine is now convinced Calvin to house this great white shark. And they have it in the back shark exhibit tank. But then Calvin's like, screw that, put it on display. And he ends up moving it. The shark isn't fully rehabilitated yet, and so he decides to actually put it out into what is, if you ever go to SeaWorld and you go to the manta ray exhibit right out front of the shark exhibit area, it's where you could put like pet the stingrays and things like that. It's really cool. It's super fun for the kids and things like, I mean, hell, it's super fun for adults too. But it's just, you know, get to pet. I mean, it's free. You don't have to, you know, I mean, I think you could pay for like food and things like that to feed to the stingrays. But it's just really fun. But that's the tank that they put this great white shark in. And this is a 10-foot great white shark. And it's just like this thing, it felt like it was just this itty-bitty baby 4-foot shark. And so Calvin puts it on display, and then as it's swimming around, it decides to just go ahead and die. And Catherine, like, she sees, or she hears over the intercom that the Great White Shark exhibit is now open, and so she rushes over there because she knows that the shark's not supposed to be moved yet. And when she rushes over, she sees the shark, like, you know, go belly up, and it can't sustain itself. It's not healthy enough, and it's like a shark can't live in captivity like that. So it was a thing where she was trying to keep it alive, and the 10-foot shark just could not sustain and ended up dying. And as, you know, Catherine was walking away from the tank, she ends up running into Philip, and she's like, go ahead, go, you know, go take your photos, like, go get what you need. And they just kind of leave it at that. So while our group is dealing with the death of our 10-foot shark, there has been a couple of SeaWorld tourists that are down in the underwater walkway exhibit, and they're checking out everything. They're, you know, looking at all the fish and just oohing and aahing. But then what gave me extreme Jaws 1 vibes, so they really kind of set you up for the holy shit gotcha moment, jump scare. So as one of the girls is walking by the tank, this dead body decides to float its happy ass up and just goes right in front of this girl, and the tourists absolutely freak the fuck out. And the thing that I thought was absolutely hilarious is that as one of them's freaking out, they're freaking out so bad that they're pushing one of the other girls up, and she's basically face to face, like, to this dead corpse. And this thing looks gnarly. Like, it looks rotten and beaten the fuck up. Like, it looks nasty. And, so she is literally face to face with this thing. And, I would be traumatized as well. So it turns out that, they end up collecting the body because, you know, obviously SeaWorld can't have that. And they were missing one of their maintenance guys. He just didn't decide to show up for work one day. And they thought that he was just being, you know, a drunk and all that stuff and just being just lazy because he just kind of, that was just kind of like his personality, but they're like, oh, he never showed up for work. And, lo and behold, boom, he was shark bait. And, so when they went up to see him and, you know, Mike wasn't ready to see that, and he was having flashbacks to, you know, what his dad went through. And what was crazy was that, you know, Catherine, like, she saw the body as well and saw the damage, and it was a shock to see that, you know, that grotesque figure that was underneath that blanket. But she was more shocked as to what it was that caused it, because they were thinking it was the 10-foot shark that caused that damage, and it wasn't. She was like, this thing is 35 feet, which is fucking bananas, because Bruce in Jaws 1 was 25, which was huge. Like, that was like much bigger than what any other real, like, great white shark. I think normal sharks are about 15 to maybe 20 feet. So to have it a 25 footer was massive. This is 10 feet bigger than Bruce. It's 35 feet. Now, let's put this in perspective, right? A megalodon was, like, estimated to be about 60 feet. So this thing is half of a megalodon. Like, that is insane. So, and the only problem that I had was that, yeah, this thing was supposed to be 35 feet, but it didn't feel like it was 35 feet. Like, it was a big shark, but it didn't feel like it was, like, it was a bigger threat than what Bruce was. Bruce felt like it was, like, I mean, yeah, we didn't get to see the shark until towards the end of the movie, but it's like when Bruce, like, popped his head out of the water and scared Martin, you know, while he was throwing the chum, it was just, you felt like, oh my God, that thing is huge, and you guys are going to die. Like, yeah, you're going to need a bigger boat. And this, it didn't feel any bigger than Bruce, but it's just the knowledge that, yeah, this thing is 35 feet long is just absolutely insane. Now, to talk about the shark, I, at the beginning of the film, was, like, ecstatic. So the way that they handled the shark at the beginning of the film was fantastic. They made it so that it was more of a, we're not going to show you right off the bat, which is exactly what I felt, you know, they need to do for a shark. Because, I mean, obviously we know, you know, what the killer is. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. So, I mean, it's like you can't sit there and, like, okay, we got to, you know, hide it from the audience members. We're not going to make the, you know, we're not going to pretend they're stupid. But at the same time, it's like you don't want to show it. But then they would still make it a point, like, I guess, like, one of the first kills that made me laugh really hard was there's this grouper that gets eaten, and they do the whole, like, the chomping sounds where it's like the chomp, 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 chomp. And then you see the blood, and then they do the whole 3D gimmick. And we'll talk about that, but they do the 3D gimmick where the fish head just stands right in front of the screen. But they showed that just to show the whole motion of the shark going through the water. And then it gets into the whole complex. But when they show the 10-foot shark, they're showing stock footage of an actual shark, and it makes it feel so much better. They did that in the original Jaws. When they couldn't use the puppet, they went out to Australia, I believe it was, and they ended up taking, it was a miniature cage, and they put like a dummy or anything like that. They put a miniature cage out there so that it could amp up the scale of the, I mean, the sharks were huge, you know, while they're filming them, but it made it feel natural and real to see that shark, like an actual shark swimming around. And yeah. Now, the one thing that I wasn't really keen on was they were trying to make the shark a lot faster. And so the camera was sped up a little bit too much. So they were showing like the natural shark. And what I feel would like kind of killed it was later on in the movie. Yeah, it was a 35 footer, but the thing was slow and lumbering, and it kind of put you to sleep. It didn't feel like a threat. Like, and it was because of the 3D aspect of it. It was just kind of like you were looking at a cutout of a shark coming towards your screen, and it wasn't as bad. Now the one thing that I do love about the puppet was the way that they did film it. It made it feel very mysterious and very just eerie. Most of the time, it's like whenever the shark was coming out of the shadows, one, boom, like that's awesome. Having it literally come from the shadows out of nowhere. And it was, again, everything was super dark, super like quiet, like when it was under the water. So it was the stealth aspect of it was really, really good. I liked that a lot. But it just gave it that extra creepiness and eeriness when you could just see that image coming straight from the blackness and then coming right out. I was like, I mean, I could tell you how many times as a kid, like you're just sitting in the pool looking at in the deep end, and you could just, that's all you're imagining is that shark coming out of the shadows and then just like coming at you just straight for you. That was something that I enjoyed, but again, you could definitely tell like it was a puppet, and they were the movements just wasn't really, it was too side to side, and you could tell like it wasn't, it, there just wasn't a natural feel to it. Like there was the time where like, so after it breaks into the main control room, like in the big finale scene, so it breaks into the control room and it gets stuck, and it's literally just going back and forth, and it just stays there, and it feels like it's an animatronic. It doesn't feel like a shark. It's just the real, like when you go back to like Bruce, when it breaks through the orcas, the main like deck hall, like in Brody's, like as the ship's sinking, and it's just before he goes up onto the rafter and does the whole, you know, smile, you son of a bitch. And like just before that whole thing, it's like the shark, even though it's a animatronic, it's like it feels real. Like it feels like it's legit. And I almost feel like it's more of a, it's all in how Steven Spielberg filmed it, and just the you know, having that like overhead shot, like that one where Brody's up on the banister and he's trying to get away from the shark, and you can see the shark below just, you know, chomping its jaws and just all the chaos going on. It just feels like that shark is going after him. This one, it, you know, in Jaws 3, when it breaks through and it's like trying to get after, you know, Mike and Catherine, it's just like it feels like like you're on a ride at Universal. It's like there is no threat. You're not going to die. It's just the shark's just there, just hanging out. So to go back on the 3D, to go ahead and jump into this real quick. The 3D is absolute dog shit. It is the worst part of this film. I think that it really, really, really hurts to have any type of any 3D in the 80s. I mean, if you go back and watch, you know, Friday the 13th Part 3, and what was hilarious is that I was like, you know, most of the three movies tend to always kind of have some type of backlash. When this film came out, Jaws 3 was also the same year going up with, it was Star Wars Return of the Jedi, Superman 3, and then I believe there was another 3, but I know those were the three big ones. And what was hilarious is that when Jaws 1 was being released in the 70s, Star Wars A New Hope came out, and Superman 1 also came out. So this is just the next rendition where it's like, yeah, so it's like, yeah, all the originals came out, but then now all the threes are now released in the same year too. And what was really funny was that Jaws 3D was actually going to be a comedy. The original, you know, producers, they were saying that, you know, after 2, they were kind of contracted into doing it. And they even said that it's like, okay, well, after this one, it's like, it's just going to be, you know, a joke. No one's going to take the shark serious anymore. So they're like, okay, well, let's just make this into like some type of like Animal House, you know, comedy, you know, just National Lampoon's it, and just let's let the shark be funny. And they were going to do this whole thing where aliens are dressing up as sharks and they come down and they are, you know, terrorizing a bunch of kids. But it's just, it's a crazy, wacky comedy. And it was going to be called Jaws 3 Human Zero. And it's like, it got to the point where it was so bad that Universal was like, no, we're not doing that. And they wouldn't even put those producers back onto the film. Like, it was pretty rough. And so when they came across, you know, with this film, they found their opportunity to kind of do something a little bit more, but, you know, continue on with what the story, you know, with that. And they were even thinking about just trying to do it where there is no connection to, you know, 1 and 2, but they were feeling that, okay, well, no, it would do the franchise a little bit of injustice by not having some type of Brody into the film. So I think they did a fantastic job as far as, you know, adding in the characters, but when it came down to that whole idea of, okay, well, we're going to, you know, make this into a 3D, that was the really rough thing, because every 3D part, it was either that was like, it felt like it was just a cutout of something. And again, I'm watching it on, you know, HD, you know, Blu-ray, whereas back in like the 80s, when this thing was first released, you know, you get all the graininess and there's no, I mean, I think it might have been just a little bit better, but at the same time, it's still really rough. I mean, when like that fish head that's just like floating in front of your face, you're just like, okay, cool, wow, that's great, no. And then moving on, and it's just like it stays there too long because it's like, ooh, look at the fish head. Look at it. Look at it. You're still looking at it. All right, no, we're moving on. And then they do this thing where it's like after the first guy dies and he gets eaten, you can see like his arm like is floating in front of the screen. And everything is always just slightly to the left. And I think that's because they were trying to do like with the 3D, you had to have it in a certain position or in order for the 3D aspect to actually work and make it feel right. So it was interesting. But like, yeah, it was like, okay, so they have an arm just floating in front of your screen, and then that was about it. Another one that I know that they always love to do is to have something coming at the screen. And they did this in Friday the 13th too with the spear gun. But yeah, so Mike goes to shoot the shark this is a 10-footer. So they go to capture it, and as they shoot it, they do the whole gimmick where the spear gun is going straight towards the camera. And, you know, that way the audience member goes, oh my God, something's coming at my face. And they did the same exact thing with Friday the 13th. So it was just funny that they kept that same gimmick. I'm trying to think of like another one that was really good. I mean, there's a couple of them that were just like, it's so silly. It's like they're just doing it just to utilize the 3D. Like, it was when the tourist is down and the underwater walkthrough, they come across, it's like this weird squid tentacle thing, and it scares one of the tourists, and it's just an animatronic, and it's just there for the gimmick. But they do this thing where the camera goes right to the end of the tentacle and just stays there, and like the tentacle's not moving. It's just more of like, oh, like, look at the tentacle. It's like, oh, that scared the tourist. Oh, and it sucks. It really kills the movie. It holds it up. It's not needed. And it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like if a lot of these parts with these 3Ds, if 3D captions, if they got rid of them, it probably would have moved the movie along a lot quicker. It's really bizarre. And it's like, I know that the gimmick is there. And I know it's like with the newer 3D movies, much better. Still hurts the shit out of your eyes, but much, much better. I think my absolute favorite 3D movie for this day and age was Tron Legacy. I am a big fan of that movie, and seeing it in 3D in IMAX was awesome. Like, I really, really do love that movie. But that's the only film that I think I will ever watch in 3D and enjoy. I believe we went and saw, it was My Bloody Valentine, and this is right when they were trying to revive the whole 3D era, and there was a couple of movies that were like really like into that, but that was like the first one for horror that I remember being like, we're going back to 3D, and they did this whole gimmick where like one of the girls was like trying to climb through this car, and the miner went and threw a pickaxe, and the axe is going straight towards the girl, and she, instead of getting out of the way, she leans into the center of where the kill shot would be, and then the pickaxe nails right in front of her face. But it's made, again, it's one of those 3D, you know, gimmicks. So it's like she moved right in front of the shot in order to get the 3D. And I was like, and stuff like that just drives me nuts. I can't. It's unbelievable, and I don't find it to... I feel it hurts the movie more than anything. And in this film, it does that quite a bit. And the most iconic of them all is the main shark scene where the shark is swimming up, and Dennis Quaid, or, you know, like Brody and all those guys, they're all in this control room. And they see the shark swimming up, and they're just like, oh, my God. It's like slow motion, just, no, look, the shark. And then you could just see the shark, this paper cutout of the shark swimming up, and just, and then out of nowhere, I mean, it's not a paper cutout, it's a model, but it's literally just, it's not moving like side to side. It's weird, but it looks like a cutout, but it's moving slowly towards, and then all of a sudden it hits the glass, shatters the glass, and then like fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin, and just, and then like the water just flows right in, and then it's just the shark's trying to, oh, he ends up like chomping the shit out of Calvin, which is a bummer. And that was something where I thought was kind of cool that they showed him biting down on Calvin, and then the shark takes another bite and then splits him in half. So I thought that was kind of I like that. That was a neat little kill. Again, I like Calvin, so it's thought that he died, but you know, it is what it is. Now, as for our kill scene for the shark, it also made me giggle just to see another shark movie to have the ending be another explosion. And almost every single shark movie that you come across, whenever there's some type of, you know, like they got to get rid of the goddamn thing, there's always some type of explosion. Like, I mean, hell, even in the movie The Meg, there's some type of, like, they have to blow the goddamn shark up. Like, there's no other way to kill a shark other than explosives. So, earlier in the film, so both Philip and his cameraman, Jack, have decided that they are going, in order to save the people down in the underwater walkway that has now been sealed off, you know, they're trapped underneath. In order to save them, Brody has to go down and reseal the tube so that way it unlocks and lets everybody out. Like, it unpressurizes and lets everybody out. Well, they can't do that with the shark swimming around. So Philip decides that, oh, well, they're going to lure it in back into one of the vents where it initially came from, and they were going to use their, like, you know, live bait, basically use themselves in order to do that. Well, it actually works. You know, Philip goes inside I guess it was a vent. He goes inside the vent, and he's tethered up to this ladder, and he's going through this rope, and he's pulling himself all the way through. And as the shark is swimming so slowly behind him, and then Jack shuts the gate behind him and locks it, and that gives Brody enough time to go and do all the fixing and everything else. Well, the funny thing is that is a really long tube. And it turns out that Philip ends up, the tether breaks free, and he's just kind of just stuck there. Well, the shark ends up chomping on him and then literally swallows him whole. And one of the great things about this film, and I have to applaud it so much, is that we get an inside look as to what it would feel like to be eaten by a shark. And it was so awesome. It's probably one of my favorite kills in this entire film. So we're getting a bird's eye view of these teeth just chomping down and just crunching. And just, you can just hear the screams of just him being digested and just torn up. And it's so good. And it's just so satisfying. But the funny thing is like, so Philip was trying to escape and he's trying to save himself. But at the same, and he had these grenades and he had one in his hand. And he was trying to pull the pin, but he couldn't, but he ended up dying before he could do it. But he was just sitting there holding it, still in the shark's mouth. So shortly after, the shark breaks in, towards the end of the film, and he is trying to get at Brody and Catherine while they're, underwater, freaking out, as they rightfully so. But then Brody notices, he looks in the shark's mouth, and he can see Philip. Philip's not fully digested, and he's just still, a corpse holding a grenade. And so they are we got to pull the pin. And so they're trying to do that without getting too close to the shark's mouth. And it's just this weird game that they're playing with it. But then they turn around and they actually get this stick or the spear gun into the shark's mouth. And they pull the pin and then they set the grenade off and then big explosion, and then they do the whole 3D thing where bits and pieces of the shark's jaw fly towards the screen, and it's just ass, and everything's just, it's a mess. But it's just, it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, boom, big explosion, and then that's it. Well, the end of the movie is, it's satisfying to a degree because they're like, okay, yeah, it's everything is done, but it's like it's another one of those movies where I kind of want to know the aftermath of what happened after that. It's like, was there cuz Calvin was the big guy and he ended up dying. And so now who's going to run SeaWorld? I want to know what happened after that. How did Catherine and Brody deal with the whole media backlash? There's so many more questions that I have for that. But it is one of those endings where it's like they show the dolphins jumping out of the water and Catherine and Brody just cheering, and they do the freeze frame at the end. It is a satisfying ending. It's fine. But yeah, this film is, it's got its problems for sure. And I think I can go ahead and get my skull rating on this one and let's wrap this one up for you guys. I'm going to give this one is a 2.5 for me. As much as I love this film, it's more of a love out of nostalgia and because of what it is. Is it a good movie? No. It's got its moments, but the story really isn't fully fleshed out. It's not, it takes the concept of a shark in a theme park. It works on that, but it doesn't go to its full extent. I would want there to be more carnage. I want there to be, just more blood and more, show me more. But you didn't give me really anything. There was only one big death, and that was the maintenance guy that was trying to fix the gate. And then it wasn't until towards the end of the movie when they started getting into more deaths and things like that. But it was still very lackluster. And I think also utilizing the 3D aspect really hurt it as well, because now they're trying to figure out more scenes just to throw in the 3D, and it doesn't really fit for whatever, like what is actually, you know, what the main focus of the story is. I mean, some scenes did, but like there was it kind of takes you out of the movie, because now it's almost like a loading screen, like on a video game. Like, that's kind of how I felt that the 3D scenes were. They were the loading screens. Like, it's just, you just kind of got to wait, and then, okay, now we're getting back into the movie. Now, a lot of the characters I really liked. Brody and Sean, fantastic. Absolutely loved the brothers. They felt natural. It was incredible. And I love that with the Brody boys, they touched on what happened to them just very little, you know, within their past. It didn't let the, it wasn't like a complete info dump. It was just enough to get the audience members, like, their fanfare. Like, it's like, okay, well, we know, like, we understand what happened to them, but, you know, the other characters in this film, they have no clue. So it's like, you just kind of have to just take it at that. And this is probably something that the Brody's boys have been dealing with their entire life. So it's like they're kind of used to that type kind of situation. So I really, really love the Brody boys. I mean, how Catherine was also, you know, really great too. I loved her as like the marine biologist, and she was just kind of like the voice of reason when it came to a lot of the scenes. So, I mean, like, again, and one thing that I thought was really cool too was the chemistry between all the characters. The chemistry felt very natural. And most times, like when you get into a movie that's maybe not as good, or you know, could be in that, like, you know, like B movie territory, sometimes like the chemistry just doesn't work with a lot of the you know, with the actors. But for this one, it felt spot on. Like, I was like, I had no problems with it. And for, you know, this director's, you know, first and really only movie, I was like, I thought he did fine. I was like, yeah, there's a couple times where it's a little slapdash, maybe a little bit, you know, rough around the edges. But at the same time, I was like, I thought he did fine. Again, yeah, it's a 2.5 for me, but it's, I mean, it's still enjoyable. I can still watch this movie and just have fun with it, but it's one of those, like, is it a good movie? No. Is it fun for me? Hell yeah. It's a great good time. And I'll sit down with some popcorn and just have some fun with it. I know that it's not good, but it's one of those, it's very, very enjoyable. And one little memory that I do also have, when I mentioned the Jaws of Revenge. So for the longest time, I had this photo of me and my brother standing in front of a Bruce animatronic, and it's one of my most cherished pictures, just because it's just like I actually got to meet a Bruce. Well, and this is right like where now it's the Mardi Gras stage, like, so their concert series and things like that at Universal Orlando. Before, they used to have, and I miss that they have it, but it used to have all these old props from all these different movies, and they would just be sitting out in this little, you know, viewing area, and you could just go and just hang out and just see, like, I mean, they think they had, like, it was like the, well, I mean, they had the DeLorean, then they had, it was the, from the movie Casper, the big contraption, like, there, like, that thing was out there. I mean, there's so much, but I remember Bruce being out there, and I was geeking out so bad. Well, it turns out that was the Bruce from Jaws the Revenge. And I was looking at the side, and I was just like, oh my God, I couldn't believe that was the fucking shark. And Meg likes to bust my balls on it all the time because I thought it was the Jaws from Jaws 2, and it turns out that it's the Jaws from Jaws Revenge. So I still love that that picture, and knowing that it is that shark, it's really funny. But yes, like for this movie, I like it. It's fun. The whole franchise. I'll probably do a good full franchise recap here at some point, just because it's like, now that I got the whole thing down, I think that'd be kind of fun just to kind of do a little bit of a whole franchise recap. But yeah, I definitely want to know what you guys think. And, you know, thank you guys for listening to me ramble on about this goddamn movie for an hour. But yeah, I want to know what you guys think. You know, please go ahead and email me at creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com. Or just hit me up on Instagram or Facebook at creepingitreal. That's R-E-E-L. And yeah, I am not on Twitter. I will not touch that hellscape. I do not want to. So you can't make me. But yeah, so it's Facebook, Instagram, and, you know, just hit me up, DM me, and, shoot me over, some suggestions. Or if you got any, fun Jaws stories, yeah, let me know. I got a bunch more, but I don't want to sit there and bore you guys with it. But yeah, so yeah, definitely hit me up. Also, just to get some extra support, I do have merch. You guys can go over to the Instagram. In my bio, there is a link. You just click on that, and it'll send you right over to Redbubble. And, yeah, all the artwork is done up by me. And you can basically get whatever the hell you want. You can get, T-shirts, book bags, hats, skirts, I mean, bath mats. You can get stuff for your pets. It's fucking awesome. And and the quality is fantastic too. So, I mean, it definitely helps support the podcast. So, I mean, if you guys buy anything, just message me and say, hey, check out what I bought. And, you know, the more promotion, the better. That's all it is. And then, yeah, I give you extra kisses for it. So, but guys, I do appreciate it. And thank you guys so much for spending my birthday with me. And so on Friday, July 21st, I'll be 37. Oh my God, that hurt to say. All right, guys. Well, big kisses, and I will definitely see you guys next week. And I'm going to go have me a cold one.